You found something?
Yes, my lord.
That's it. The rebels are there.
My lord, there are so many uncharted settlements.
That is the system. Set your course for the Hoth system.
As long as everybody behaves, this will be quick and painless.
Did you hear that? We're doomed.
Welcome to Echo Base, your weekly water cooler discussion exploring Star Wars news, issues, mythology, and understanding that galaxy far, far away.
We will use all our resources to unravel this mystery.
Dodging Imperial probe droids while leaving no topic unturned in this frozen wasteland.
You're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
Now live. Dock the snowspeeders and lock up the tauntauns. It's time for Echo Base.
It's not Tatooine, that's for sure.
All wings report in.
Red 10 standing by.
Red 7 standing by.
Red 3 standing by.
Red 6 standing by.
Red 9 standing by.
Red 11 standing by.
Red 5 standing by.
Red 2 standing by.
Right now I feel like I could take on the whole Empire myself.
Cut the channel, Red 2.
Standby alert.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the base.
Close the doors.
Yes, sir.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Echo Base. Oh, it's been a while. We took a couple of weeks off. I think we took 1 week off.
It was 1 week.
Okay. So not too bad. It's the summer. We're allowed to do that. It happens. But we are back. And that's the important thing.
Yes, we are.
We're actually recording on Thursday instead of Tuesday because I wasn't available on Tuesday. I was out of town in a cabin in the woods. And not like with the cool Joss Whedon movie. Nope, this was far more boring. But anyway, we are back. And before we go any further with the show, I want to give a quick shout out and thank you to Sean Patrick, who sent us in a link to his Facebook page with video from his trip to Skellig Michael Island, which is really freaking awesome. That's what we should do. We should get a random Cheddar Network get-together on Skellig Island.
That would be pretty awesome. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how we'd pay to get everybody over there, but that's not the point.
We just need to hit the lottery pretty soon.
Yeah.
One of us.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're going to post a video of that in our show notes. And it looks like my son is running around upstairs getting into trouble. So that's awesome.
That is awesome.
Great. And I'm already going to have to do some editing in this episode. That's just great. Anyway.
You could leave it in his background noise. Come on.
Yeah. I'll just leave it in his background noise. We've done worse on the show, I suppose. Well, let's jump right into the news. We actually have some gaming stuff. I don't know if you guys have been up on the latest from Fantasy Flight Games, but they've actually got quite a few things coming out.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of the stuff coming out. Looks like some pretty good stuff.
Yeah, and it's all coming out like either this week or next week. This is like a big month for them, I guess. They've got a two-player game playmat for the LCG, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but if you've played cards for a long time, you learn to appreciate a good playmat.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you have games that have as many different piles and zones as some of the more modern games do, having a good quality, clearly laid out playmat can make a big difference. So they're releasing an official two-player playmat for the Star Wars Living Card Game. Speaking of the Living Card Game, the last Force pack in the Endor cycle called Redemption and Return is out next week. The Imperial Veterans expansion pack for X-Wing is out right now, apparently. And I missed it. That's what I get for going out to a cabin in Maine somewhere. The Imperial Veterans, it has a repainted TIE bomber. It's gray with a white stripe from Gamma Squadron. And a TIE Defender from Glaive Squadron, which is painted red. And, of course, they've got new pilot cards and such. And one of the things of this entire list, probably the thing I'm most excited about, which is kind of silly, Lou, you've probably seen these. Chris, you haven't really done much with the gaming, the miniatures and stuff, have you?
No.
Okay. But Lou has probably seen this, and I bet you're excited for this,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
The colored bases and pegs for the X-Wing ships. And this seems like the most, like, insignificant, piddly little, irrelevant thing. But I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I am, too. These look pretty cool.
They look awesome.
You know, between that and the new movement dials they have.
Yeah.
That are pretty cool, too.
Those look great.
Yeah, I got to buy a bunch of this stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. And, of course, Armada, lest it be left out. They are getting two new ships. Not this week, but they're coming soon. The Liberty, which is an MC-80 cruiser, a Mon Calamari cruiser.
Mm. It's basically the same body as Home One.
Mostly. It's got kind of lateral fins on the side, kind of.
Mm. But, I mean, same size, same kind of class of ship, yeah. I guess. Has different armaments and different...
No, I think isn't it smaller? I think it's a little bit smaller.
I thought I read it was the same. I could be wrong.
I could be wrong, too.
The same when I was reading over the stuff on FFG's site.
I was looking over all of the other details about it. I wasn't really looking at the scale. And then they've also got one of my favorite Imperial capital ships, the Imperial Interdictor Star Destroyer. Mm.
Yeah, from the books, this was one of my favorite ships out there. Just the thought of a ship that would be able to rip ships out of hyperspace.
Yes.
Always intrigued me.
Yeah, I mean, I know you've got the firepower of the bigger ships and all that, but at least you can run away from those.
Mm.
This is the one that would probably make Han Solo a little concerned.
Yeah, this is a ship that'll pull you out of hyperspace into the theater of battle make you fight.
Keep you out of hyperspace. Yeah. Very, very nasty. But so that's coming out soon as well. So Fantasy Flight Games, a lot of cool stuff coming out. And if you haven't picked up any of the FFG stuff, it's not too late to jump in. Find a game store that has a Star Wars night and just go and hang out and watch the other people play. It's been my experience every single time that complete and utter strangers will... they'll interact with you. They'll explain what's going on. They'll welcome you there. It's a good experience. And
yeah, a lot of times we'll even, you know, hey, come on, sit down. Sit with the squadron, you know, play with us.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Because most players bring stuff for both sides of the game. So, you know, a lot of times if there's a new person there and the guy's not otherwise engaged in a game, he'll sit down and kind of show you the ropes and you can use his stuff. And yeah. And whether it be the card game or Armada or Imperial Assault, it's a good way to learn the game, but X-Wing miniatures especially, in my opinion, this is one of the easiest games to jump into of any game I've played that's been out for a while and is already well established. Like, I tried playing Magic the Gathering a long time ago, and just I never felt like I got caught up in being able to just hold my own just with the availability of all the different stuff that was already out there. With X-Wing, still to this day, people are winning national and world level championships with basic TIE fighters. You can get whatever ships you want. And if you can maneuver, which is just a matter of practice and gaining familiarity with the way the ships move, if you can maneuver, that's probably 75% of the battle right there.
Mm.
So you don't have to go and get one of everything. I'm sorry. I will try to stop geeking out about X-Wing right now. It's just...
Well, you know, before we get off of X-Wing for 1 second, actually, uh-huh. This is actually more for Chris. Since we're going to get down to New York Comic Con this year in October, we couldn't get tickets for the Saturday. I think I might bring down my X-Wing stuff, and we'll have to maybe play a
player project. Yeah. There.
That would be great.
So I figured, if nothing else, we'll definitely get out of the city and hang out and do some stuff down there, non Comic Con stuff, but... I figured we could probably play.
Oh, we totally got to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know what we'll do? I'll set up a couple of microphones and a couple of video cameras, and we'll record it.
Oh, there we go.
And I will give the most obnoxious sports commentary throughout your game that has ever been heard.
Did we really invite him, Chris? I thought he said he couldn't make it or something. But yeah, Eric,
I couldn't.
What was that about?
I couldn't. But you know, I would do it just for you guys. I know you would want that.
Of course you would. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Chris's number one fans here in the chat room with us. Notice they're listed as anonymous. It's probably much safer
that way.
It's
Chris logged in from the browser.
There you go. I was thinking maybe it was the anonymous group.
Oh.
You know, yeah. All right, what else do we have? Oh, Star Wars The Force Awakens, the Lego game, just came out this week. Am I the only one who's picked it up so far?
Yeah, you know, I forgot it was coming out. I definitely want to grab it because it looks really fun.
Yeah, it is. I didn't get to play too far with it because I made the mistake of playing with my son, who insists on playing cooperative games, but insists on playing them non-cooperatively.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been thrown off the cliffs so many times in Disney Infinity. I think we probably crashed the game because the game just didn't know what to do anymore. But anyway, The Force Awakens Lego, very, very cool. We've talked about before, it's only $9.99 for the season pass, which is freaking incredible. I mean, nobody has a season pass that cheap, so that's a steal right there. If you get the deluxe edition, which comes with the season pass, it also comes with a Hoth expansion pack and a little Finn minifig. Like a physical Lego miniature fig for Finn in Stormtrooper outfit, I think. So that was pretty cool. I'm a little bummed that I thought I pre-ordered it and I didn't. And by not pre-ordering it, I missed out on a Jabba's Palace set.
Oh, that's right. That was the pre-order. Yeah.
Really, really bummed about that. And I missed it by one day. Oh, well. Anyway, it's still really good. It's worth picking up. And the improvements they made to the gameplay, I didn't get far enough into the game to really, like, get into all of the little nuanced changes and such. But the combat, I think, is a lot better. And I got to do a little bit of the ducking and the aiming out from behind cover. I got to do a little bit of... I saw how the difference between... You know, whether you build one thing or you build another thing when you've got a pile of Legos sitting there. It's pretty good. It is definitely an improvement over the game engine from before. So, sadly, the last bit of gaming news I think we have. Star Wars Rebels Recon Missions for iOS has been pulled from the iTunes App Store. And will be officially shutting down on July 28th.
Huh. I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, it was a platformer, kind of a side-scrolling sort of game. It was okay. It was very okay.
Your recommendation.
Yeah, it's probably the best. It had some really cool characters in it from Rebels. So, yay for that. I mean, it wasn't horrible. It was...
Okay, just, yeah, well...
I mean, a lot of the Star Wars games that have come out for iOS are a lot of, like the other games that are coming out for iOS. They're bland games that are fun for 10 minutes. And then it's like, oh, wait, and you want me to pay you more money? Forget it.
Yeah, I'll put it aside and I'll pick up something else. Right.
Right. And there have been some good ones. I still think that the Pit Droid game was a great puzzle game. I liked Tiny Death Star, but Tiny Death Star is also... I think that's been in the grave for quite a while now.
Yeah.
I actually played the Star Wars Assault Team
one for a while, but...
Yeah, Assault Team is gone. I mean, all of them are going to be gone because Disney Interactive is no more.
Right, yeah. Hopefully somebody will pick up the torch and run with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the games on smartphones these days make so much money that you know Disney's going to license it out and somebody's going to pick up... Where Disney Interactive left off. They're going to have more Clash of Clans clones, and they're going to have, oh, I don't know, Match 3 clones and Hearthstone, Magic the Gathering clones, and, you know, everybody's just a clone of everyone else, it seems like. But speaking of Rebels, Season 2 is coming out on DVD and Blu-ray on August 30th.
Yay!
Yeah. That's very cool. Celebration Europe 2016 is going to have a future filmmakers panel. So, Joel, hope you're listening in the chat room. You are our official Echo Base field correspondent for Celebration Europe. I expect that you're going to see this panel. If not, you're fired.
But now, if he gets arrested or anything, we'll disavow any knowledge of his actions.
Are you kidding me? If he gets arrested, I'll pay him double. That's great press, man.
That is good press, yes.
Yeah. But, Joel, get arrested after the panel, not before the panel. Timing is key. So what this is, it's on July 17th, which I think is a Sunday. I think that's the last day of the convention, which is a lot like Celebration Anaheim, where they did the Rogue One panel on the last day of the con.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's going to have Pablo Hidalgo, Kathleen Kennedy, Kiri Hart, who is the Lucasfilm Senior Vice President of Development. All three of them were there at the Rogue One panel at Celebration Anaheim. So we assume that this is going to be a similar sort of thing. It is also going to include Rian Johnson of Episode 8 and Phil Lord and Chris Miller from the upcoming Young Han Solo anthology film, which has not been titled, but at this point, I think we'll just call it Young Han Solo.
Right.
So
that's going to be a fun panel.
I think
that,
so.
That's going to be a lot like what I think that panel that we saw at the end of Celebration Anaheim was supposed to be like.
Right.
Until they, you know, fired the director and had to, you know, just go a different route. That would have been pretty cool to see all that stuff. And I am looking forward to any Rogue One news coming out of Celebration London.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that because Gareth Edwards has his own Rogue One panel at Celebration Europe.
Oh, Joel, go to that one.
Yeah. Well, and rumors are well substantiated rumors are that there will be Episode 8 footage of some sort at this panel at Celebration Europe. So probably nothing from Young Han Solo.
Mm.
Maybe some casting news, perhaps. Maybe a bit of an idea of when the story will take place. I imagine there'll be like just some brief synopsis information, perhaps. I would even be interested in hearing information about the challenges of casting Alden Ehrenreich or something. You know?
Mm. Yeah, that would be kind of cool. I actually hope at some point we get to see a bunch of the, you know, testing footage or testing, you know, takes they did with different people.
Oh, that would be great.
That'd be kind of fun, you know.
Can you imagine if they released that on the DVD as bonus content?
That'd be very cool.
That would be awesome. Anyway, so if you plan to go to Celebration Europe, you know, looking back at Celebration Anaheim, of all the panels that were there, I think the biggest ones were probably the one at the beginning of the convention where they showed the new trailer. Though, honestly, you could see the trailer immediately online afterwards. So, you know, if you missed that panel, it wasn't that big a deal. Though, I imagine seeing BB-8 roll around physically
on
in
stage,
person for the first time.
Cool, yeah.
I do regret not getting to see that. But otherwise, of all the panels at Celebration, I think the Rogue One panel was probably the most exciting and the one that really gave me goosebumps above anything else. So if you're going to Celebration Europe, I would gamble on saying that this future filmmakers panel is the one to get to.
I kind of feel like they would announce something like a surprise there.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe a trailer for Episode 8.
Oh, you think? Oh,
that would be nice.
I don't know. Seems kind of early.
Teaser, maybe.
Oh, that'd be cool. That would be. I don't know if they're going to do that before Rogue One. I mean,
I don't
know. Rogue One is a real test for them because it's an unknown commodity. It's not one of the trilogy. It's a standalone movie. You know, how well will this do compared to the other ones? They don't want to take any thunder away from that.
True.
But we'll see.
But, I mean, you can't ignore Episode 8. Rogue One was easy to ignore with The Force Awakens coming up. In fact, they really wanted to make the marketing about Force Awakens. But I think that with Rogue One coming up, I think it's safe to still kind of tease Episode 8 a little bit.
I think that's all you can do is tease it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if Episode 8 had a release date in May, I could see that, but it's a whole year away, year and a half away.
Well, yeah, I don't think it'll be a full trailer, but I think a teaser maybe.
Okay. Well, I'd be happy, but I'm skeptical. I don't think we're going to see that.
Okay, fair enough. You may be right. Let's see what else. Speaking of Pablo, poor guy. I've been saying for years that I'm jealous of him. I want his job. And then every time you see him on social media, it's like you just... I want to bake him some cookies or something. And I'm horrible at baking things, so I definitely don't want to bake him cookies because I don't want him in the hospital. But, you know, I feel bad for the guy. So there were a bunch of rumors going around that George Lucas, after, he turned over the treatment for, which basically is just a synopsis, a summary of Episodes 7, 8, 9, that he decided to go ahead and write out a script. And so he and someone else, he allegedly got Doug Chang and, the other design artists and stuff to do some work, etc., gave it over to Disney. And Disney turned it down because there were too many ties back to the prequels. And the rumor was that Lucasfilm had a ban on anything related to the prequels. So for a very brief time, fortunately, this was going all over the place. And Pablo shot it down and confirmed that the rumors that George Lucas had an Episode 7 script at all, and that Lucasfilm had a prequel ban at all, are both false. And also, come on, people.
Yeah.
They just announced well, we'll save that for the discussion segment where we're going to talk about some really, really super minor spoilers for Rogue One that have been all over the internet anyway, and you probably already know from Entertainment Weekly. But one of the Clone Wars characters is making an appearance. Not a prominent one. One that most people have forgotten about. So right there, like, proof comes out that they're not only not banning the prequels, but they are incorporating the prequels. And then word comes out that there's a ban. It's like, really?
Yeah, it's like people are just trying to stir the pot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the sad part is they're succeeding. It's obnoxious. You just want to take them and, like, beat them with a garden hose or something. I don't know. Don't do that. We're not endorsing that.
To be fair, people in various fandoms, if they hear something on the internet, they will believe it. All you have to do is look at the recent Captain America debacle.
Yeah.
But that's true. Isn't it?
No, they released new information about issue 2 of that.
Yeah, but I read through that and it was kind of like, I mean, it's still accurate. It's just different than we thought.
From a certain point of view, right?
Right.
Yeah. So,
well, that's a whole different show. That's for Outer Rim or Random Chatter. But yeah, it's anyway, guys, listen. Pablo Hidalgo, at the risk of sounding like I'm just kissing up to him, and I have no contact with the guy, really, although every contact I have had with him, he's been incredible. But the poor guy, he works his butt off. He is responsible. When you look at the grand scheme of things, he and the other members of the story group have so much riding on their shoulders. If anything gets screwed up about Star Wars and the chronology And the overall story, as far as things not working with one another, which is very easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
If anything like that happens, it's their fault because they let something slip through the cracks. They have a lot on their shoulders. And this guy works his butt off, and he's awesome to everybody at the same time. It's like, give the guy a break. Just stop making the stuff up. Let the guy have a few months off of Twitter. You know, let him browse, I don't know, CNN.com, see what else is going on in the world, and then come back. And he'll get back to the debunking stuff later. That he keeps saying that he's going to stop, and yet people won't let him. Anyway, sorry. Oh, get off my soapbox. Another person getting off their soapbox is George Lucas. He was going to open up a museum in Chicago. I don't know if you guys remember this. It was going to, you know, basically George Lucas Museum, a bunch of Star Wars stuff, Indiana Jones stuff, etc. And, well, originally he was going to open it up on the West Coast, but he and his wife have moved to the Chicago area, and so he was going to open it up there instead. And apparently that has fallen through. A quote from him is, "No one benefits from continuing their seemingly unending litigation to protect a parking lot." And also, "The actions initiated by Friends of Parks and their recent attempts to extract concessions from the city have effectively overridden approvals received from numerous democratically elected bodies of government."
Okay.
So in other words, it's the museum had gotten the legal permissions they needed. They got all of this stuff taken care of, and apparently this other group has put up so many roadblocks in the way for actually getting anything to move that Lucas has decided that, well, as he said, no one benefits from continuing this unending litigation to protect a parking lot. So he's given up. Which is kind of sad, like, to me.
Yeah, you know, that's the whole not in my backyard thing and the whole, you know, everybody's against something. It's like, really, it shouldn't be that big of a deal.
It's Chicago. What are they worried about? Increased traffic? It already doesn't move. I'm now, sorry.
What was the bit there about the protection of a parking lot? What was that about?
Well, I guess, like, the area that they were going to build it basically is just this unused area that's all paved over.
Well, maybe somebody has fond memories of, you know, being there.
Roller skating outdoors in that parking lot or something?
Yeah.
I don't know. Here's the thing.
Anything anybody wants to build somewhere, if it's big enough, there's going to be opposition to it. People are going to start forming committees against it. It's like, really? You know, sometimes it's like people just need to take a step back and relax.
Yeah. Yeah. On an entirely different note regarding this topic, I am a little bitter, and I will admit it. I'm a little bitter that all the cool stuff ends up happening on the West Coast. And what little happens on the East Coast, they find the furthest end of the East Coast. In fact, you know, Florida has this peninsula sticking way out into the water. It's like, that's the perfect place. We can get as far away from everybody as we can. And they stick the few things that the East Coast gets down there. It's like, why can't we? I mean, Chicago would have been great because no matter where you are in the United States, at least, now, obviously, people in other countries are still going to have a problem. But at least in the United States, no matter where you are, you're no farther than about halfway across the country from Chicago. And you could make it there and see it. It would be a new location to go do something Star Wars-ish in outside of the Disney parks. And right now we don't really have that, and that would be great. And yet, now we're not going to get it. And I think that's really sad. I mean, I don't have a lot of opportunities to even travel to Florida, let alone the West Coast. But the chances of me being able to make it to Chicago are a lot better than the chances of me being able to make it to Anaheim again. I mean, I have family members in Michigan. I have friends in Wisconsin. I've got other people I know in Indiana. Like, there's other things I can kind of blend into a trip there, you know? Yes, I'm a bitter East Coaster. I'm sorry.
I'm really starting to feel sorry for George Lucas. I mean, he gets all this bad rep for the prequels.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, people are like, make more Star Wars movies. And he said, no, because you'll just hate them. Then he sells pretty much his life to Disney. And then, you know, his ideas, you know, depending on what you believe, get dropped for a sequel trilogy. And then he can't even build his own museum. I mean, come on.
And then someone else takes his baby and makes it into something outrageously successful.
Yeah.
That everybody loves. Well, most people anyway. But yeah, it's like, stop kicking the poor guy in the teeth. That's okay. We'll get him on the podcast and we'll get his side of the story. At some point, George Lucas will be so beaten down that he would even be willing to be on our podcast.
That's saying something.
Yes. That's pretty sad. All right. Well, we have a couple of discussion topics for this week. They both could end up being really long or really short. I don't know how this is going to go. We're going to wing it, as always. But Entertainment Weekly spoke to Samuel L. Jackson recently. And he was talking about Mace Windu. And Sam Jackson is absolutely convinced that Mace Windu is still alive. And that, much like Yoda, he's just kind of been hiding out through the whole Jedi purge and all that. And Sam Jackson says, Jedi can fall from amazing distances, and there's a long history of one-handed Jedi, so why not?
Okay.
But wait, there's more.
But why?
Because Mace Windu's awesome, and he has the coolest-looking lightsaber ever. Well, I mean, the lightsaber's probably gone, but... So Sam Jackson said that he spoke to George about it, too. And he said, George doesn't have anything to do with Star Wars anymore. George is like, I'm okay with that. You can be alive. So, straight from the creator's mouth, Mace Windu, according to George Lucas, is officially alive.
That's a bit of a stretch.
To Lucasfilm, who now gets to decide what's official and what's not. But, I mean, they have still been respectful of what seemed to have been Lucas's wishes. Dave Filoni is still making the animated TV series, and he was under the direct tutelage of George Lucas himself, and seems to have been carrying on in the direction that George wanted things to go in general. In fact, the character that we mentioned earlier that we're going to discuss in regards to Rogue One is a character specifically that George was going to have used for something else and wanted to have appear in other things. So, and I think that's another big misconception too about Lucasfilm. They're not completely apathetic to George's overall vision. I think that they have a bottom line that they need to reach, and I think that their top priority is the ongoing business-related viability of Star Wars as a franchise, because they are a business.
Mm-hmm.
But immediately second to that, I think that they are respectful of what George wanted. I don't think they're apathetic.
Yeah, I would think they'd have to be. I mean, these are people that worked with George for a long time. I mean, it's not like it's Disney got rid of the entire Lucasfilm crew and brought in their own people. It's the people that were there before, and they were there because they loved Star Wars.
Right.
You know, I'm sure some of them had their own thoughts as to, you know, whether or not George did the right thing in certain situations, but overall, they're there because they love what George built, and they love the story, and they love the concept and everything that goes along with that. So, of course, they're going to be, you know, apathetic to what he's gotten, helping out with kind of carrying on what his thoughts were.
Yeah.
Although I have to think there's a bunch of people in the story group now going, oh man, how do we write Samuel Jackson's character back in here? Oh God, where are we going? We got to see, did he get caught by a spear? Did he? their wheels are turning right now.
Ask us. We did a Lost podcast.
That's true.
We can explain away anything.
We can spin that.
We can spin anything. It's Coruscant. How many levels there are for him to bounce off of. And look at physics. I mean, Lou, you're a pilot. You understand things like terminal velocity. He can only fall so fast.
True. True.
At that point, he can't fall. I mean, yeah, there's a gazillion levels on Coruscant. Well, he's going to reach terminal velocity at some point, and he's not going to go any faster. So now he's, I mean, all of those extra levels, that's all the more chances for him. I mean, that's a benefit.
You know, those robes are big. They act as like almost like a parachute, slowing him down a little bit, too.
No, I think he took his robe off, didn't he?
No, maybe.
Like his clothes?
I don't think he did.
I thought he did.
I mean, it was PG. He couldn't take all his robes off.
Oh, well, yeah.
Technically, no. It was PG-13.
That's for the bonus content. That's right.
I want to hear the story about the young child who finds his lightsaber and, you know, hurts himself or kills his friend or something. You know, like, you know, kids always find their parents' guns here and there, and there's always that, you know, let's ban guns. Let's ban lightsabers. Maybe the kid hurt his friend.
Can you imagine the public service announcement television commercial?
If you find this, it's not a toy.
Oh, that'd be great.
Just to clarify, he does have his robe on when he falls out the window.
Does he?
Yep.
Ah.
Okay.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, I was wrong. But it's not like he was chopped in half or anything. Even that he could have come back from.
Yeah.
So come on.
Well, yeah. Speaking of that, sorry to digress. I've finally got my wife back into watching more of the movies. We're trying to get her all caught up and everything. So we ended up watching A Phantom Menace the other night.
Uh-oh.
Well, yeah, I was like, okay, be prepared. This is the weakest of the three, you know. But so we got to the end of it, and you know, Darth Maul gets cut in half, and she's like, oh, I guess he's really gone. And I was like, well,
yeah, no, he's really gone.
Kinda, he'll be back.
I wonder. If they would try to bring him back for the movies.
Ooh.
I'm not saying they should. I'm just saying, right. I wonder.
I just they missed the boat with him way back when, because it was an awesome character and they shouldn't have killed him off so fast. I wanted him to be the Darth Vader of the prequel trilogy, you know, be there throughout and kind of be menacing.
You know, I mean this criticism in the most loving way possible, and that's the truth. But I really didn't like that about George Lucas. It's like he would come up with these really awesome ideas for villains and then kill them off so quickly. I mean, Darth Maul was a great villain.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't have a lot of depth to him, but that's because he didn't have a lot of screen time. If you
didn't give him a chance.
Yeah. I mean, he was the bad guy for the whole trilogy. I mean, if he was the Count Dooku of the prequels, dude, that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But they killed him off. Yeah. Okay, fine. So Jango Fett, they actually gave him a little bit of depth. And, you know, it had a chance to do with him what they didn't end up doing with Boba Fett in the original trilogy. Great. Except no. Then they kill him off in the second one. And then we get General Grievous. And I've said before, I saw preview footage of General Grievous at Celebration 3, and you know that scene with him spinning up the four lightsabers and going at Obi-Wan, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like everything we ever hoped for in a Star Wars villain. This episode 3 is going to be absolutely incredible. Well, not really. I mean, he had a scene early on where he basically shoots a window and jumps out of the spaceship, and then later you have almost entirely the scene I saw. So I just feel like it was all kind of wasted. Brilliant creations again, and props to Lucas for coming up with those characters. That's, I would have never thought of a four-armed cyborg wielding four lightsabers at once. That's awesome. But do more with it. So I guess, like, normally bringing Maul back would be the type of thing that I would loathe. And yet I feel like we didn't get enough of him. He wasn't properly utilized. I would be okay with them bringing him back. And now we would have kind of Maul and General Grievous put together in one body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Darth Maul with the spider legs, you know, bouncing all over the place. And I don't know. I'd be okay with that. I mean, I don't like looking at the story, the way the story seems to be developing right now. I don't think there's any place for it, but, you know, it's,
you know, you were talking about how much development we had for Maul in Phantom Menace. And I'm trying to think back to, you know, how much screen time he actually had. And I'm also thinking back to A New Hope and how much screen time Vader actually had, because Vader really wasn't on screen all that much in A New Hope.
Vader had more screen time in A New Hope than Maul did.
Okay.
I mean, Maul had a couple of over
not the much though.
I don't know. So if you look at Maul in Phantom Menace, you had the hologram shot where he walks up from behind Palpatine when Palpatine's talking to the Nemoidians.
Nemoidians, yep.
And you have a brief shot of him on Tatooine before the pod race. And
when
then you have
probes out. Yep.
Uh-huh. And then you have the battle scene just before they get on the ship on Tatooine, both of which, I mean, one was extremely short and the battle scene was very brief as well.
Pretty short too. Yep.
And then you see him on the balcony with Palpatine later on. And then you see him again. The next time you see him is at the hangar on Naboo. And then you go into the
You
battle.
See him with the Nemoidian somewhere too, I think, don't you?
Yeah, because
briefly, but then you see him in the hangar. It's a pretty long scene.
I mean, it's almost like he's in the isn't he walking along with the procession of them when they've got the hologram of Palpatine on the little walking hologram robot?
I'm just trying to think. I mean, I'm looking through here. I found on Screen Rant has a thing about Vader only had 12 minutes of screen time in A New Hope.
Well, but the difference with that is that Vader has a lot more impactful scenes.
Exactly.
True, he did, yeah.
Like, you can sit and think about probably all or at least the vast majority of Vader's scenes in A New Hope, but you kind of have to struggle to get all of Darth Maul's aside from the lightsaber battles.
Yeah, and you're right. The screen time he had, it was him in control. He was being, you know, menacing and fearsome and everything else.
I mean, Shmi Skywalker probably had more actual screen time, but you'd have a hard time arguing that she was as big a deal as Darth Vader. It's more about how he was used.
Yeah.
And as we're recounting the scenes with Darth Maul, we're talking about him being in the background over someone's shoulder.
Yeah,
almost
walking along. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, he had one line of dialogue, two sentences in the entire film. I mean, he was the epitome of underused. He is arguably the most underused character in the entire saga.
Mm-hmm. Mm, yeah.
So, anyhow, so about bringing characters back, before we move on to some other characters, what about Mace Windu? If they could find, let's go under the assumption, because I don't think, if they bring him back, I don't think they're going to find a dumb way to do it. If they bring him back, they're going to find a creative, good way to do it. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt that the writing skills, creatively speaking, are adequate. Okay?
Yep.
Going on that assumption, would we want to see Mace come back?
I vote yes.
Okay.
I think he would be kind of a good, I don't know if part of me kind of doesn't want him to be an all out Jedi like he was. I kind of would rather see him be kind of like Kanan.
Okay.
Whereas he's, you know, he's a Jedi, but you know, he's been on the run and, you know, like Obi-Wan really, but you know, maybe he kind of turned into like a Qui-Gon type of character who didn't really want to follow the Jedi way anymore because he saw what happened, and maybe turn into like a different type of character, I guess.
That would make sense. I mean, to be one of the ranking members of the Jedi Council and then having Palpatine all this time right under his nose, basically right down the street from him. And everything that happened as a result, I mean, you can argue that that is on him and a handful of other Jedi. And that's a big deal. So, yeah, I imagine that that would be a great way to move his character forward, is to show him dealing with not just the grief of what's happened, but the guilt. And how does that change you, knowing that everything that you, all of the structure and code that you lived by all this time was flawed in such a way. Maybe it wasn't morally wrong, but it was definitely flawed because it allowed this other stuff to happen. So where do you go from there? Morally, you could argue it was still right, but it was an ineffective way. It was the wrong manner in which to pursue that morality. So, I mean, that could be a really interesting character conflict.
Yeah, I think he'd be good for Rebels, honestly.
Yeah.
Especially if Ahsoka turns out to be dead. He'd be a good way to maybe help Kanan in his teaching, since he's apparently blind now.
That's a good point. Lou, what do you think? Do you agree? Should we bring Mace back?
I've been trying to think about this the whole time you guys are talking, and I can't think of a good reason to say yes to this, because, I mean, his character was there, his character had its run, and it's over. I think we can come up with a new character and do something a little bit different. We don't have to bring him back. I mean, I guess the fact is, even though we could, should we? You know, what benefit do we have of bringing him back versus creating a brand new character?
You know, I feel like it's kind of hard because, like I was just talking about underutilized characters, and it's difficult with the Star Wars films because Lucas created these worlds where you know that there's so much going on in the galaxy, and that each person you see on screen has a backstory, and in a lot of cases, a future story and side stories. And he does a good job of making you curious about what those may be. And yet Mace apparently comes to an end. His story is done. And when a character's story is done, generally, it's not really a good thing to revive it just for the sake of nostalgia or getting that character back again. On the flip side, because there was so much condensed in the films, especially in the prequels, it does kind of make you wonder if maybe there's not a bit more of a story to tell. But then the flip side of that argument is that we had 6 seasons of the Clone Wars, so we did get that extra story. So I can kind of see both sides of it. I think that, see, even when we saw Mace Windu in the Clone Wars, I never really felt like he was developed much more. I always felt like he was being used as a storytelling mechanism to help the progression of the other characters. So
yeah, he definitely was not a lead.
Right. And that's fine. You know, that was always his role. But
I just have a hard time with the whole bringing somebody back from the dead thing. It doesn't usually work for me. I mean, tell a story about them before they died. Tell a side story that was taking place at the same time some other major event happened that we want to see. If you wanted to keep him around, don't kill him off. To me, it feels like a cheat every time you bring somebody back. Even Maul feels a little bit like a cheat, not as much because of the way they did it, but it still feels like, hey, we could have done something else. It's something different.
Yeah.
And I love Maul. Don't get me wrong. I think he was a fantastic addition to the end of season 2.
Yeah, I think that what they did with him was interesting, and it justified bringing him back. But I understand where you're coming from as well. I think I'm just going to leave it hang there with Mace Windu, and we'll leave this for the audience to write in and give us their ideas on this, because I think that a lot of you out there probably have some really good thoughts on this. So write us, and maybe we'll, I don't know that we'll have another listener feedback episode so quickly after the last one, but maybe we'll set aside a discussion segment in one of the upcoming episodes and just look at this particular topic. So let us know what you think about that, about, you know, would we want to see Mace actually come back or not? Moving on along that same line. Now we're going to get into, again, what I consider not spoilers at all, pseudo spoilers. These are things that have been revealed from official sources publicly about Rogue One. These are not leaks. This is information that Lucasfilm voluntarily gave to a press organization, specifically Entertainment Weekly. And last week's Entertainment Weekly had a big spread on Rogue One. It talked a little bit more about the characters. None of this really spoils the story. It's just giving background on the different players involved. And even then, just light background. But if you're hardcore avoiding spoilers, you might want to duck out.
Okay, I'll see you guys later.
I know better than... Yeah, no, you guys have heard these next 2 points just in probably casual conversation at this point. So we have two returning characters for Rogue One. One, as I mentioned before, is actually a character from the Clone Wars, Saw Gerrera. And when I heard the name, I'm like, who? And then I read the description of who it was. And I kind of remembered it from the Clone Wars. I'm like, oh, okay. I think I get that now. And I remember enough about the character to have formed an opinion about him. For those who don't know, I am the worst person to... Yeah, Chris, you know who he is, right?
Who?
Saw Gerrera?
No, I do not. I did not watch the Clone Wars.
Oh, that's right. And Lou, you binge watched it like I did, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's what's hard about binge watching is
you don't get that level of sinking in. You're right.
You're not rewatching
it. This wasn't even a character that I've heard in passing. So
okay. So there's a story arc with Ahsoka on a planet with a resistance group, and there was a brother and sister. The sister was a little more level-headed about leadership of this group. The brother was much more, what's the word I'm looking for, Lou? Like much more aggressive.
Yeah, militant. I was going to say was a word I was kind of thinking.
Yeah, but his tactics were a little more far-fetched, a little less level-headed. So. Yeah, so that's the nature of his character, and he kind of, well, go back and watch those episodes of the Clone Wars. It was late in the series, if I recall correctly, and they were actually really good episodes. I do remember that story arc as being one that I really enjoyed of the series. But he is going to be coming back in Rogue One. In fact, he is the character that Forrest Whitaker plays. And I like the fact that they're bringing a character back. It's a character that originally George was going to have had in the live action television series. And George specifically wanted a character who goes overboard with how far he takes things against, the Empire. And, you know, he's one of these guys who doesn't care about collateral damage. He's a zealot. And, of course, the live-action TV series was canceled. And so now they're utilizing that character in Rogue One, and it seems to work. But before we discuss him, the other, again, I wouldn't call it spoiler, but the other reveal is that Darth Vader is returning for Rogue One. Though Kathleen Kennedy says that they are going to use him, quote, sparingly. And... oh, and they also revealed that James Earl Jones will be doing the voice. So that's obviously awesome.
Yeah, that's definitely cool.
So what do you guys think? Let's take Darth Vader first because he's the obvious one. I mean, Does it make sense to bring him into Rogue One? I mean, are you guys okay with this? Are you annoyed by it? What are your thoughts?
I like it.
Okay.
I've liked his involvement in Rebels, and I think that kind of ties things in well. Plus, this is more about James Earl Jones, but I know people have kind of complained about his voice and his delivery of Vader's lines in Rebels. And I think that if you see an on-screen appearance of Vader, you know, right before A New Hope, and I'm assuming he's going to have probably the same type of delivery with his voice, I think it'll ease people's minds.
Hmm.
But yeah, I very much approve of Vader's return.
Okay. Lou, what do you think?
Yeah, I like it as well. Kind of like Chris just said, I like his involvement in Rebels so far. I think it's a nice way to do it. He's not a main character, but he gives that sense of, you know, impending doom every time you see him on screen. It really gives a feeling of threat to the main characters.
Right.
Having him in Rogue One, I think, is just going to add to it. As long as it's not overdone, you know, I mean, he shouldn't be the focal point of this movie, because that would take too much away from, I think, the story they're trying to tell.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love the fact he's in there.
Yeah, Kathleen Kennedy, one of the points that she made with Entertainment Weekly, like, she said very little about it other than to say that they're using him sparingly.
Mm-hmm.
And she specifically used that term. So that tells me that they are going with they're probably inserting him to demonstrate the interaction between him and the director. The guy with the cloak, who we were all wondering, is he ISB? Is he a Grand mm-hmm. Admiral? Yep. What's his role? So he is the antagonist of the film. And so it kind of shows the difficulty between this character and Vader. This character obviously works within the military hierarchy. Vader is present in the military hierarchy, but works outside of it and reports directly to the Emperor. And this is not the first time that we've seen that be an issue. We've seen it in A New Hope. We've seen it recently very well portrayed in the Darth Vader comic book series. So it makes sense, and I think that probably the way in which we see them interact is going to help set a feeling, kind of a sense of importance of this other antagonist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if this guy basically quivers every time Vader's around, then he's just another, you know, expendable Imperial officer. If this guy gets pissed off every time Vader's around, if this guy talks back to Vader, if this guy does anything verbally to Vader to indicate even that he is displeased with Vader's interfering with his procedures and what he's trying to do, that indicates this guy actually has, the gall to stand up to Vader, in which case he's probably a force to be reckoned with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it could actually be used as a very quick and easy way to kind of set a sense of presence for this antagonist. But I also like the fact that, see, to me, growing up, Vader was always like the ultimate evil. And you have mm-hmm. to remember, we didn't see the Emperor in 1977. We saw a hologram of him briefly in 1980. And if you're a kid, you had no idea what the relevance of that was. The Emperor never really seemed like anything important until 1983. And so we kids had 6 years, which is a long time to a kid, especially a young kid, of Darth Vader being the ultimate bad guy in cinematic history. Like, there was just, you couldn't create someone who was more evil than Darth Vader. Like, he was the ultimate imposing villain. And even with the Emperor, after Return of the Jedi, Darth Vader still kind of remained that way for years and years and years. And then when Anakin Skywalker came about in the prequels, not that the prequels did anything wrong, this was inevitable, but we saw Darth Vader humanized, We saw where he came from. We saw the conflict he went through. We saw the fact that he didn't want to be evil, but he basically resigned into that. You know, he had a sense of resignation that this is just what his lot in life, to quote 3PO. So I guess it weakened the imposing, like, just sense of dread you got in the original trilogy every time Vader stepped on screen. I like the fact that we're getting a little bit of that villainy back with Darth Vader in the comic books. Like, he actually seems like a threat again. It's bringing back some of that. No, it's not just that Anakin was lurking around behind a mask, sticking his tongue out at Palpatine every time Palpatine walked by. No, Vader actually did evil stuff, and it reminds us of that. And I'm hoping that what glimpse we do get of Vader in Rogue One is him actually being evil. We don't really get that anymore. Not just with Vader in Star Wars. I mean, there's a lot of this type of fiction where we don't get really bad guys anymore. We all have to be so sympathetic toward the bad guys that, you know, the sense of good versus evil is so muddied. I don't know. I think it would be refreshing to see really evil bad guys again.
I agree. I couldn't agree with you more on that. I mean, too often we get the happy ending, we get the thing, everything all wrapped up, nice and neat. Mm-hmm. I want it to be messy. I want this to be, you know.
Yeah.
He's a bad guy. He should be bad.
Yeah. I mean, he blows up a planet. All right. What about Saw Gerrera?
He didn't do that, but.
You know. Well, yeah, I know he didn't, but. So Saw Gerrera, what do you guys think? Is this a smart move? Is it good that they're bringing back prequel era characters into Rogue One? And if so, is this the right way to do it, or should they have done it differently, or should they have brought back a more prominent character, or should they have not brought anybody at all? What are your thoughts on this whole thing with Forrest Whitaker's character?
I like the way it's somebody who's kind of obscure that wasn't real mainstream. You know, with everything before, I don't want a prominent character brought into this new movie. I want this to be about new characters and new stuff going on. So, yeah, I think they're handling this pretty well. I don't mind having somebody in there who's on the fringes of what we already know. I think that's a great way to do it.
Okay.
My opinion's kind of on the side of I don't really care.
Well, to you, mainly, this character never existed before anyway.
Exactly. So I'm not going to go in with any preconceived expectations about who the character should be or how he should talk or how he should act or really anything. So as far as the character himself, I don't really care. Now, in terms of bringing in prequel characters, again, as long as it somehow, anything that has to do with the prequel trilogy, if it advances the story in a meaningful way and isn't done just for fan service, I will be fine with it.
So, I kind of feel like this is probably the right way to do it. And Chris, I think that you epitomize why this is the right way, because you have no history on this character. When I pointed out his name, you didn't know what I was talking about. When I described the scenario and the scenes from the Clone Wars, you had no idea what I was talking about. And the reality, whether we like it or not, is that not only the mainstream audience has not seen Clone Wars, because, I mean, let's face it, if Clone Wars ratings were that good, we wouldn't have had to fight to get season six. And it wouldn't have been, you know, basically straight to DVD. Like, it's the reality is, statistically speaking, the mainstream audience has not seen Clone Wars, and a good portion of the Star Wars fans have not seen Clone Wars, and there's nothing wrong with that. So, this character is not a prominent character. It's not Ahsoka. It's not Kanan. It's not Hera from Rebels. It's not, you know, it's not Darth Maul. It's, you know, it's not a well-established character that has a long backstory that when Ahsoka appears on screen, not only do you already know the history of the character, the motivations of the character, how the character is expected to react, the reality is most people will start clapping when she reappears in Rebels and hasn't been seen for years and years. With Saw Gerrera, he's enough of an unknown character that it's been established how he's going to react to things, but it's not so ingrained in us as Star Wars fans that they won't have to demonstrate that in the film. So his role as an extremist is going to be demonstrated somehow in the film. Either his interaction with Jyn Erso is going to be that he's trying to get her to behave as an extremist and trying to argue his side, or it's that he has changed as a character over time so much that he will be trying to warn her away from going too far, which based on the trailer so far, probably sounds like that's the direction he's going. And we don't really have to know a lot about his backstory to see that, because he's got scars on his face. He's got, I mean, he's obviously battle worn. So it seems like if you're going to do this, this is the right way to do it. Do the Snap Wexley thing. He's a pilot. He's there. We get to see him be a good pilot in The Force Awakens, and that's enough for the mainstream audience. And them watching The Force Awakens, they're not losing anything by not knowing who Snap Wexley is. They're not losing anything by, I forget, Leia's assistant, I forget Corey's last name. I'm like 10 minutes away from finishing the audiobook from Bloodline. That was the nice thing about having a vacation that was like 3 hours away. But, you know, you see her on Hosnian Prime just before it blows up, but you don't need to know who she is. You don't even need to know that she's Leia's representative there on Hosnian Prime, nor what she's there speaking to the government about on Leia's behalf. That doesn't matter. But if you're into that extra lore, it's cool to know, right? But we didn't even find out until after we saw The Force Awakens, because Bloodline wasn't released until later. So I guess I feel like this is a good way to handle bringing other characters in and kind of tying things to the prequel. And I also think that it's, I mean, we need to do this. We need, I don't care what you say about the prequels and the quality of them. It's a saga. It's a universe, and what happened in the past in that universe matters. And what happened in the past affects the future. And I think it's good to somehow tie things back around. So I don't necessarily care about this particular character, but as a fan, I appreciate the way in which they're starting to tie things together. And I think this is a good method. So, any other thoughts on this before we wrap up tonight? Anybody else you want to see brought back from the prequel era?
I hadn't really thought about that.
Or from Rebels, or from the original trilogy. I mean, obviously, Lando is the big one that everybody's been talking about. But anybody else? Like a non-A-list character.
Wedge.
I was just going to say that, yeah. That would be cool.
Or maybe one of the expanded universe pilots.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
Mm-hmm.
But just with stuff that's officially canon. The TV series, the films. I mean, a lot of people have brought up Mace Windu. This is not the first time we've heard the argument that Jedi jump and fall long distances all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but not when they're shot by lightning. That could throw off his whole balance thing, you know, see?
I don't know. Luke got shot by some pretty powerful lightning over and over again and managed to carry his dead father all the way out to the shuttle bay.
Yeah, but he just fell down to the floor. He didn't, like, fall out of a building.
Yeah, but he was still coherent enough to sit there and whine the whole time he was on the floor. I think Mace Windu, arguably one of the more powerful Jedi,
dragging Vader's body throughout the Death Star there when people are running around trying to sit and say, hey, isn't that Vader? Who's that guy?
Yeah, I mean, couldn't he have looked at any stormtrooper and said, hey, grab his legs? I mean, come on.
I think Chris is right. Wedge is the one that comes to mind for me. I'd love to see Wedge in one of the movies somehow. That'd be really fun.
You know, I can't really think of anybody else that.
I mean, you know, the Jawas.
Yeah. Then you'd have to have a desert planet, and I don't really want that. I like the tropical paradise planet that we're getting in Rogue One. I mean, other than the lasers and the explosions and the AT-ATs and stuff, otherwise, you know, you set up a beach chair and you got a little oasis thing going there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, that'd
just
be nice.
Don't get shot at. All right. Well, you know what? We would like to hear who you would like to see come back, if anybody. And also, what are your thoughts on Mace, on Saw Gerrera, and on Darth Vader? And then finally, the Lucas Museum in Chicago. If you have any thoughts on that, we would like to hear that as well. So send your thoughts and your feedback via email to echobase@randomchatter.com. See, Joel in the chat room thinks that they should move the museum to Canada. And honestly, I think that's probably a good idea. I mean, why not? Move it to Toronto or Vancouver. They're both, well, let's stay away from the West Coast. But, you know, Toronto, it's a major North American city, one of the larger ones. And, I mean, why not?
We can get there pretty quickly, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd go for that.
The Last Disciple in the chat room would love to see Callus in a film. Agent Callus from Rebels. Especially if he progresses as a character. I mean, right now it seems like he's kind of like middle management.
They're the first ones to go.
Well, not with Vader around.
It's true. Well, join the Empire. Get online, facebook.com/randomchatternetwork is where you can find us on Facebook. We're also on Twitter. Outer Rim Podcast is the Twitter feed for the podcast itself. You can also find us at Random Chatter, and you can find all of us individual Twitter feeds. Mine is at Lusecki. That's Lusecki. Chris, where are you?
I'm at The Curse of Chris.
And Eric?
You can find me at Eric Blythe. That's ERIKBLYTHE. And you can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com, the entire network. We've got Random Chatter, The Outer Rim, The Sabacc Table, Green Justice, Scarlet Velocity, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, The Retro Convo, and Cordcast is coming very soon. In fact, I've got to get that posted to our Patreon donors who get to listen to that a little bit early. So, yeah, but you can find all of those over at randomchatter.com. General Veers. That's who I want to
see.
General Veers.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
The only military commander we saw in the original trilogy to actually win.
That's because General Veers is cool.
Yes.
Because he had a cool first name.
Well, that too.
All right. We'd really appreciate if you could spread the word about the network and the show, too. You can leave reviews for us on iTunes and Stitcher. That really helps us get exposure and get our name back out there. And tell your friends about us. We always appreciate the feedback and always appreciate the recognition from everyone. And it's nice to be known.
Yes,
it is. It is. And if you want to listen to us live, you can do so on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We usually start on Thursdays at 9 p.m. We do two shows, and on Tuesdays we just do one show at 10 o'clock. You can go to randomchatter.com/live to listen to us there. And you can also search for us on Ustream. Just search for Random Chatter on Ustream. You'll find us there. And I think if you do it on the app for iOS, it'll be ad-free. Is that correct still?
I believe yes. So. Also on Android. I think it's also the same same deal.
Cool.
And just be aware, those times are Eastern time. Sorry, I thought I was going to lose my audio stream there. But at least it would have happened at the end of the episode, so that's good. finally, we want to give a shout-out to our Patreon donors. We really, really appreciate the support from our donors. You know, when we were on the ForceCast Network, we had an owner with a lot of different websites, and he used to cover, getting us to conventions and things like that. We don't really have that anymore. Everything we do is out of our own pocket, right down to the hosting fees, to to getting to New York Comic Con, to getting to Celebration next year. So we don't make a profit from this or anything. We will probably get advertising at some point, but right now we don't have that. We rely on our donors, and we love to have a system like Patreon where we can give something back to the donors, and we're really grateful for that as well. So if you want information on that, head on over to patreon.com/randomchatter. And I want to give a special shout out to the donors, Joe, Joel, both Jareds. We have a lot of J's who donate. Jeremy.
It's a requirement.
Yeah. We have another Eric who spells his name with a K, interestingly enough. So he chose wisely. Also Bradley, Chad, Kyle, Carrie. Carrie just joined us in the Slack channel. If you're listening, Carrie, your invite is in your email box. So if you haven't joined already, go check it out. Also, Morgan, Chickafant, The Blake and Sal Show, Alex, and Tim. So thank you to all of you. We really appreciate it. And that's it. That's it for this week of Echo Base. We are going to close the blast doors, hunker down, safe from the Empire, and we will see you next week. Take care.
The Force will be with you always.